Welcome to the Fish Nerds. I am Dave.
I'm Clay.
And we're going to start with a conversation that Clay and I had when we were going to do a regular show, and we realized it's just not time to do a regular show. So
it doesn't work. Yeah. All right. So it's been a – those who follow the Fish Nerds on Facebook know about this already. But it's – I live in New Hampshire. We live in New Hampshire. I live in the White Mountains in a very small community. And the other night I was coming out of a meeting with a friend of mine, Brian, a colleague, and the meeting was in a building right on the water. And we heard a guy screaming on the ice, just screaming for help. And one of the worst sounds like you can imagine, just complete panic screaming. So my friend and I, we each grabbed our phones. We each called 911 at the same time. I told him to run to the fire department, which was right next door to the building we were in. And I ran out on the ice to try and help the person who was in the water. And feel free, by the way, to stop at any time and ask me questions. anyway, so I ran out in the water. I'm on the phone with 911, which on a cell phone might not be the best thing to do when you need help. I don't know if that's true or not, but I felt like it was a slow process. I probably could have done better calling 411 and asking for the fire department's phone number, because it took a long time to get people to understand what I was, where I was.
Well, and that's one of the things I've heard recently, a misunderstanding. People think if you call from your cell phone that your GPS kind of magically gives your location to 911.
Yeah, and you would think it would, and you would hope it could, right? Because my phone knows where I am. I could turn the GPS on. It could find me within 2 or 3 feet.
Right, but 911 is not set up for that.
So. No, which is a real shame. And if you ever want a good case for putting money into it, this might be the case for it. The 911 operator, and if I'm giving too many details, let me know. I'll stop. But the 911 operator asked me where I was. I said, listen, I'm behind the Conway Fire Department on the pond. Somebody is in the water. I need help now. That's pretty clear. There's only one fire department in Conway. Then she went on to ask me what street it's on and what's the address. And I said, somebody's in the water right now. Call the Conway Fire Department. Tell them to go outside with a rope and get out there now. And then she said, let me transfer you to your local 911.
Who knows where she was from?
Yeah. So then I got transferred, and I had to start that conversation over again. Mm. So the guy, I'm on the ice now. I'm 25 feet from the person in the water. I can see him. I'm yelling. I'm getting help. Hang on. We're going to get you help. And I'm looking everywhere for something I could help with. Now, I don't have any ropes or tools or anything with me. I'm just me on the ice. And I'm looking for a long branch. So I see near the shoreline a long branch hanging out over the water. So I make my way towards that. I'm still on the phone with 911 with one hand, talking to the operator. And I reach for the branch, and the ice under my feet gives way. Mm. And I go all the way underwater. Mm. And I've fallen in the ice before, but I've never fallen under the ice. Mm. And I quickly, I don't know how fast, because all the time is condensed, but very quickly got out of the water. I did the baby seal move, you know, where you just kind of shoot up on your belly on the ice and mm-hmm. slide out. And I was out pretty fast. Now, at this point, the fire department still has not got outside their building. Hmm. And I've been on the ice for probably minutes, not a ton of minutes, but I could probably measure it in minutes. And I can't tell you how much time has gone by, but it's a long enough time for me to fall through the ice and get myself out, and still I'm all by myself with this guy on the ice.
Right.
And he's still with me. He's still yelling for help. Mm-hmm. He begins screaming louder. I'm not going to be able to hang on anymore. You have to help me.
Now, was he at this time, was he floundering, like splashing around?
Or? He was hanging on.
So he screaming. Was holding on to the ice.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just screaming. I'm trying to direct him to put his arms on the ice. And he can't. He doesn't react to anything I yell to him. Mm-hmm. I ask him what his name is. No reaction. Just screaming for help, which is very hard. Mm. Finally, a fireman comes out on the ice, as well as a police officer. Neither one has a rope tied to them. And the the police officer walks a little bit closer to the guy. The water shines a light on him, and the fireman has a rope cannon, a rope gun. Mm-hmm. It's like an air gun with a rope inside of it, and he fires it towards the person in the water. And he's a few feet away. The person in the water can't reach the rope. Mm. And then they have to reset or whatever. And in that short second, the person went under the ice. Mm. And I yelled, "He's under the water. You got to get him. You got to get him." Now, I'm not in charge or anything. And of course, no one's listening to me.
Right.
And they dragged me off the ice. Mm. And then the rescue team went out to try to get him. And I thought for sure they'd get him. I mean, he was right there.
Yeah.
If I'm describing that part of the lake, that lake is a man-made lake system that's made out of a river, and this is near the drainage area. So this part of the lake is more river than lake. Mm. So there's moving water under the ice, and this part never freezes well. It's not a place I would ever ice fish or walk on or anything like that. And this person probably walked in this spot. You know, he's a local kid. He probably had walked now over that spot 100 times in his lifetime to a shortcut, and he just said that was not his day.
Yeah.
And anyway, so he drowned. He didn't make it. They didn't find him that night. And it was terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. And I keep playing it in my head, like, you know, what else could I have done? And, you know, the fire department, fish and game, everybody's been very cool with me and they let me know that I did what I could. And, it's tough, Dave.
Yeah, very surreal situation. And I can't, can't imagine.
Yeah. And he's a young guy, 23 year old. He's got two kids, you know, he's got a newborn and a 4 year old. Mm. And it just a bad mistake, you know. And a lot of people online are, you know, saying terrible stuff, or, you know, what a dumb thing to do, but it's just a mistake.
Yeah.
You know? And any one of us can make mistakes, especially at 23, you know. It's.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, yeah, just it only takes obviously a second, and it does surprise me that there was so many rescue people there that they, and I'm sure they all feel terrible.
Sure of it. I it's so hard not to second guess what they do,
yeah,
and not to say, oh, if only they had done that. But I don't know that's fair either,
right?
I don't know what their training is. I don't know what their protocols are, what their rules are. I mean, they've got to protect themselves. And,
right. You
know, I'm wondering, you know, in my head, I'm like, why didn't he just run and jump in the water? His buddies were 20 feet away from him. And that's not a fair thing to ask someone to do, you know. So there's so many things that, you know, I play this in my head over and over again. And I don't know what, you know, how to make the outcome different besides getting there faster. 20 seconds more, probably he would have been saved.
Yeah.
You know.
And I know I 20 seconds, geez.
I mean, maybe 30, but it's not much. We're not talking about a lot of time.
Yeah. I paid a close attention to the news reports that came out. And it's interesting that, so there was one report that said that the water that he drowned in was 5 feet deep.
Yeah, no, it was 8 feet deep.
Yeah,
where they found his body was 8 feet deep.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's some shoddy reporting on that front.
Yeah, now even if it was 5 feet deep, it wouldn't make any difference. It's a muddy, murky area. He may not have known how shallow it was. If it was 5 feet deep, and you fall through the ice at night, and you get in that cold water, you don't know how your body's going to react. You don't know where the panic's going to set in. It doesn't matter how deep it is.
Yeah.
It's not even all that relevant.
Yeah.
You know, if it was 2 feet deep, maybe we can talk about, oh, he should have just stood right up. But 5 feet deep is deep, cold water.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter.
And with the silty bottom, I mean, it hardly matters either.
So. You can go 5 feet of water and 3 feet of mud.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where I fell in, I was right by the shoreline, and I didn't hit the bottom.
Wow.
And I went straight down over my head.
Wow.
Magically, my phone still works.
That's incredible.
Yeah. But that's another thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you focus on the details that don't matter, too. You know, I lost my hat and my cell phone got wet. And it doesn't seem important.
Well, yeah.
But it wakes you up to talk about a little bit about, you know, how important it is to be careful on the ice and be thoughtful and mindful of where you're at and what you're doing. because, like I said, this could happen to anybody. And so just let the fish nerds tell you that just be aware of yourself, be careful, and look out for each other, because I'm heartbroken. Mm. You know, I don't know the guy, but...
Yeah, yeah.
But I know his family. I know his uncle and a few other people in his family I've known, so...
Yeah, and like you said, just a mistake.
Just a mistake, yeah. Yeah, just a terrible mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean, you know, he was dumb. It means he did a dumb thing. At 23, we all... God, not dumb stuff you do at 23 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
So...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What? So this has gotten me thinking about sort of ice safety and ice safety mm-hmm. gear and those
yeah.
kinds of things.
Yeah.
One of the things I've been putting off buying, I had a Spud, maybe 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was a chisel that was in a section of pipe. Like,
I remember this. Let me describe it for, and we're gonna lighten up a little bit here. Let me describe it for people. So Dave took a piece of pipe and a chisel, like a wood chisel, and he screwed it into the end of the pipe. And we would go out in the ice, and he would chisel this like 1-inch hole in the ice. And you would, this is before you had a fish finder, and you would jig in that hole.
Yeah.
And if you hooked a fish, you put your rod down the hole, and you would drill your hole next to that little tiny hole and catch your fish.
Yeah,
that's how you found fish.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah, that's right. And I still have that chisel somewhere. It's somewhere in my shed, and you uh-huh. know, my shed is very hoarders now, so it's not easy to find everything. But you know, that's one of the things I'm like, okay, you know, I need to drop some money and, you know, get a Spud, get a chisel, and because that's the way you test. You walk out like it's a walking stick, and you pound on the ice for a while, and if it doesn't go clear through, you're good.
Right. So. And at this particular spot, he would not have gone on the ice if he had a chisel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know.
He likely wouldn't have. How's that? We don't know what he would have done.
Right, right. Yeah. There's, of course, the story of you and I about must be like 10, 15 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
out on a tidal river and walking along with a chisel. I think it was probably that chisel.
Probably.
all, you know, walking like it was a walking stick, really not checking the ice because we had been on solid ice, you know, that day.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden it goes poof and goes right through.
Yeah. And who fell through? Me.
you did fall through. Although that was a different spot.
Oh, a different spot. Okay. I get confused what story you're telling.
Yeah. No, this was the one at the Lamprey River.
That's so, right. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so we went spooky. Out. We went to the right instead of the left.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it was you know, like an inch down there.
Yeah. You can go easily from 6 inches of ice to 1 inch of ice in 4 or 5 steps.
Yeah.
Without question.
Yeah. It's just which how the current's set up. So.
Mm-hmm.
And how the ice has fractured. So anyway, so that's one thing I'm going to invest in before I go out.
Yeah, and boy, I'll tell you what, I need to get my ice picks back out again. Put those around my neck when I'm on the ice.
Yeah, so, I have those. I never put them on.
I never do either.
Yeah.
And this is a little reminder for me to be safe. And there are people who I see on 2 feet of ice with those around their neck, and I'm like, they don't need those. But... I'm going to take ice safety way more seriously after this event.
I would think so.
And granted, this person wasn't fishing and he was not on a piece of ice that you should ever go on.
Right.
But I never want to be in a situation where I'm screaming for help.
Right. Exactly. The other thing I'm going to, and I have it, although I think I'm just going to buy a new one, is just a big long rope.
Yes.
And Tim Moore, I think it was his last show that he graciously gave us to publish, I think, 2 or 3 podcasts ago. He said something interesting, which I thought was interesting. He said, if you go out alone and you have a big long rope, just tie the big long rope to you and just let it trail behind you.
Right.
Because if you do fall in, at least now you've got a rope out there where somebody could grab onto it.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And you and I have done ice testing before on Pequawket Pond, same pond this incident happened on.
Mm.
And I had a life jacket on, a chisel, and a wrong rope tied around my waist.
Yep.
And that's how we tested the ice. I took a few steps out. You stayed off the ice while I tested it. and we didn't fall through.
No. No. And the life jacket is the other thing I was thinking about. Because they do make these inflatable life vests that are just kind of like cloth normally, but then when the mechanism gets wet, they instantly inflate.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad thing. Oh, or a lot of anglers now are moving into the float suits.
I know.
It's a bit of a pricey investment, but if you fall through, you're buoyant. And right. That's really critical, because if you pass out above the water, you got a good long time where you can be safe still, because
does clam? Oh, they call them lift suits.
They don't call them, and they won't tell you their flotation devices.
Right, because they must not have the right.
Right. But all the fishing companies are making them now. Whether it's clam or Fraybill or whoever, they're everyone's making them, and they're about $300.
Yeah, it looks like at Glenn's Army Navy store. Mm-hmm. Glenn does not give us money.
He could. We'd take his money.
They're $379.99 for the lift suit, although it looks like it's just the top. But maybe that's
You gotta buy the bib overalls and the jacket separate.
Yeah, I think, although I don't know. It looks like maybe this is the whole thing. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
It's the whole thing for like $400. It's normally $449.90. And Glenn will let it go for $379.
What a great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that's outside my ever price line. Mm. Like, it's just not going to happen. So you don't necessarily need a float suit. What you need to do is test the ice and not fish where you're going to need it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you probably – if you do everything else properly, you won't need the float suit. You can go to your local fishing game website, and every single one of them where there's ice fishing will have ice safety guidelines. I highly recommend you read them tonight and share them with everybody you know, even if they're not ice fishermen, and keep people safe because this tragedy should not happen.
Yeah.
It should not happen.
I just looked online for survival suits, and, you know, those are the ones that you see the commercial fishermen get themselves into, and then they jump in the water and they can float in freezing water for a long time.
Yeah.
They're cheaper.
Really? And I'm not shocked. You put a label on something and the price is double, right?
Yeah.
How much are the survivor suits?
Well, here's a Imperial immersion suit for $349.
Much cheaper.
No, not much cheaper. They're all in the 300s, and you could get up to $600-$700.
I'm sure you can get higher than that.
Yeah, there's a $1,000 one there, but it's an ice rescue suit.
This just in off of the WMUR Facebook page. After one man died in Conway after falling through the ice, another almost died trying to save him. Officials are warning public to stay away from the ice. I didn't almost die. Mm. I don't think that's fair, and I think that's it devalues. I'm troubled by this, and I hate this. I'm troubled by that. I want to respond to it, but I'm like, I hate that. Mm. Yeah. I wasn't in mortal danger. I was fine. But I guess they just want people to stay off the ice, and that's fair.
Right. But. So we talked a little bit about ice safety, you know, the gear to have with you and how to be smart on that. There are many, what I want to say, illustrations out there and recommendations on minimum ice thickness. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at one that says, and this is kind of interesting, 2 inches or less, stay off.
Right. There used to be the old guidelines used to be a horse can go on 2 inches of ice. That was their old rule of thumb. That's not a good rule of thumb.
That's bad for the horses.
It's very bad. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is interesting. It used to be lighter because I remember seeing that. And then it says
because ice is remarkably strong,
right?
You know, I've walked on thin ice and done fine. But to be prudent, if you're going to put out safety guidelines, they have to be prudent. They can't be based on like the breaking strength. They have to be on this is a sure thing,
right? Right. So exactly. There's another illustration that says that ducks can get on a quarter inch of ice.
I bet they could.
I bet they could.
Because they're ducks.
Doesn't do
it. Is that useless? How about a turkey?
I don't know what a turkey right. would do. And then, of course, like I said, it says, this one says 3 inches or less stay off the mm-hmm. ice. And then what's interesting, and then it goes up to 4 inches, and it says 4 inches is okay for ice fishing.
It is.
So I would say, why do they even say 2 inches is not safe, and then they say 4 inches is safe? Why don't they just say everything below 4 is? See what I mean?
I do see what you mean, yeah.
So like, I don't get it. But anyway, so 4 inches of ice, and for me anymore these days, I won't go out unless it's on 5 inches.
No, and you know, it's funny because I almost never find 4 inches. Usually it's way more than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how fast, when it gets cold out, 4 inches goes away quick. It becomes 5, 6 very fast.
Yeah, and they say 5 inches is good for a snowmobile.
Yeah, I don't feel good about that either. Mm. I like a good 8 inches for my snowmobile.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. And then this one says a car is good for 8 to 12 inches.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I know. That seems tight too. And then they say a truck 12 to 15.
Yeah, I mean, anything over a foot, you could pretty near do anything on. But God, I wouldn't go by the minimums. I would definitely push that number higher on all that stuff.
Yeah, because it's not worth it.
No. You got to get home. It's just fishing.
Right.
You know, but like all sports have inherent risk. I'm reading online. People are going, I can't believe those morons would go fishing, you know, on a winter like this. But that's like saying, like, if someone is skiing and they fall and break a leg, I can't believe that moron would ski on the snow. Or if, you know, you're a jogger and you sprain your ankle, or I mean, everything has inherent risk to it. And it's mitigating those risks that makes things okay.
Right.
And so just use good judgment and know what is safe and know what you're able to do. You're not a superhero. And believe me, when you fall through the ice, you might think you know what to do. It's a different game when you're the one in the water.
Mm.
So just don't get in the water.
Right.
Don't put yourself in that situation.
I used to think, although I think now that if I actually went into freezing cold water, I might just go into cardiac arrest.
No.
But I always thought it would be good to have a controlled environment where people practice falling in the water and getting out.
I don't think that's a bad idea.
And especially if you had like survive, you know, all the gear there and even have a rope on you and just get used to like what it feels like to fall in, to get the rush of, you know, cold water and then the practice, the tactics getting out.
Anything else you practice in life, right?
Right. Exactly.
Why not? Why not? Imagine. Gosh. So, I've had practice.
Yes, you have.
So I don't want to do it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think I totally agree with you. But yeah, just be safe. That's it.
So we're going to wrap up this edition. We'll be back next week with our normal format and our normal goings on. But
yeah, sorry to be such a downer, but I think it needs to be talked about. It happened to me. It was real. And we just need everyone just to be safe and hug your family tight and get home. My friend Brian Coffey, who was with me that night, set up a GoFundMe page for Garrett Hounsell's children. This is what he wrote on the GoFundMe page. My name is Brian Coffey. Clay Groves and I were first on the scene when Garrett Hounsell fell through the ice on Pequawket Pond in Conway, New Hampshire, on the night of February 9th. We were the last two people to speak to Garrett before he died and went under the ice. It was a horrific experience. My heart is heavy as we later learned that Garrett was a young man of 23 and was leaving behind two young sons, a 2- and a 4-year-old, and his wife, Grace. My heart bleeds for his family and how fast life can change. The money should be used for helping his young family survive such a huge loss, especially for the two young boys. I feel personally connected here. Although I never knew Garrett and he never knew me, my voice was one of the last voices he heard. I just want to help his poor family in any way that I can. I lived in Mount Washington Valley for 35 years, and one thing I have seen over the years is how generous the area is when someone's life has been cut short. It means a lot to know that as a community, we can help his family with this terrible loss. We would forever be thankful for whatever you can give. Now, on a personal note, I want to see the fishing community step up and support this family. I felt helpless, and this is one way that we can give back. So you'll see a link on our Facebook page, our Twitter accounts, our Instagram, our website, everywhere to this. And let's do our best to help this family out. Thank you.